This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Often seen on major television networks, John Tui Morales is a professional meteorologist and founder of private forecasting company Climadata. John is the hurricane specialist for WTVJ, NBC in Miami, and a famous voice during the big ones. From Miami, John Morales, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Well, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Were you surprised at how quickly a tropical disturbance in the Caribbean spun into one of the largest hurricanes ever seen in the Atlantic?
Well, I tell you, I mean, these days, nothing surprises me, right? We're seeing systems that are pretty mundane quickly ramp up, going through either rapid or extremely rapid intensification cycles to end up as these very catastrophic hurricanes. So I think what continues to surprise me is how often this is happening. And that's really what kind of astounds me and leads me to all these different reactions, which I guess I'm starting to get known for, because I've been in the profession too long, you know, 41 years as a meteorologist, and the changes are palpable and impossible to ignore, and that's what has me surprised.
It can catch people really off guard if there's a bit of disturbance somewhere, and then within a day, that's a cat something storm. It's hard to prepare for that, and you don't want to give off false alarms either.
Right. I mean, I try to tell the anecdote. Keep in mind, my work as a broadcast meteorologist has been in the Miami television market. So the story I like to tell people is that one of these days, there's going to be a tropical storm in the central Bahamas, maybe the Exumas, which 36 hours later is going to make landfall in Miami as a Category 4 hurricane. And it's exactly what you're saying. It's the element of people being so surprised by such rapid intensification that they might have ignored it or poo-pooed the threat, and then find themselves in a real bind when you end up with a hurricane of that intensity making landfall.
We often hear a pressure reading for each storm in millibars. How should the public interpret those numbers? Like, what is normal and what is almost record serious?
I think most people, at least Americans anyway, the imperial system, inches of mercury, I guess. But millibars is just another way of measuring barometric pressure. The normal, the standard barometric pressure is 1,000, but add a little bit, 1,013 to be precise, okay? But it's okay if people think about it, you know, as close to 1,000. Listen, by the time you get to 970, 960, you're already in hurricane territory. But then when you get below 900, right, that's record-setting stuff. That's top five hurricane of all time stuff. And that's what Melissa did, right? I mean, Melissa, by pressure, is the third strongest hurricane ever recorded in the Atlantic Basin. And also by pressure and by wind speed, the strongest hurricane to ever make landfall in the Atlantic, top number one.
That is amazing. It is still early to estimate rainfall totals dropping on Jamaica, but maybe it was less than feared because the storm picked up speed. Your thoughts, John?
I can tell you that Jamaica probably ends up getting less rain than Haiti and the Dominican Republic because while this storm was in its formative stages, it sat south of Hispaniola for a long, long time, throwing moisture in their direction. And we saw the hurricane make landfall on a Tuesday, right? It had formed a week prior, and that's when it started to rain in Hispaniola. And even before it became a hurricane, over 20 inches of rain had accumulated in Hispaniola. This is 600 millimeters of rain. Okay, that's a lot of rain. So I think Jamaica at that time was on the dry side, on the less active side during that time span when it was sitting south of Hispaniola. I have a feeling that they didn't get 30 inches. They probably are in the 15 to 20 inch range.
Melissa appeared pretty late in the 2025 season. We know wildfire seasons are now longer. What about hurricane seasons?
Yeah, hurricane seasons are changing in many ways. First off, in recent years, we've seen these backloaded hurricane seasons where it's not until after September 10th, which is historically the peak date of hurricane season, that we end up seeing most of the storms and the strongest hurricanes. Now, we've also seen, for example, in recent years, about half the time, if not more, May storms, tropical storms that form in May. And while it hasn't quite extended all the way to December, I mean, storms can form just about any month of the year with the possible exception of January, in the heart of winter, right? The bottom line here is that sea surface temperatures are warmer earlier and later in the year. So as far as the time scale of hurricane season, you could say that there are greater chances for us to see stronger activity earlier and stronger activity later. Plus, geographically, it's expanding as well because, again, sea surface temperatures are warm in places where they didn't used to be warm. So you'll have this year we had the development, I believe, of subtropical storm Karen, furthest north, I believe, development of a system. It just gives you an understanding here that, you know, it didn't used to be so warm in those places, and that's now supporting the formation of these storms.
Very few people in Jamaica had insurance. Can people still buy hurricane and flood insurance in Florida?
Well, you can still buy insurance in Florida, but it's very costly. And often you end up in the hands of companies that are very new. You know, they've been spun up recently to try to take on these opportunities of insurance carriers, because we have an insurer of last resort that is partly government run here in the state of Florida. It's called Citizens Insurance, property insurance company. But Citizens won't take everybody. First, you have to prove that your option for insurance is too costly or unattainable, and then the government entity jumps in. Flood insurance, the same deal. Keep in mind, the National Flood Insurance Program is essentially bankrupt. FEMA and their flood zones have modified their flood zones, and this impacts the NFIP, the National Flood Insurance Program, to where more appropriate pricing, right, is being listed for these flood insurance policies. But that more appropriate pricing is unaffordable for many. So you're seeing folks that might still owe on their property because, you know, if they own it outright, they can go without insurance and fend for themselves. But if they owe on the property, they find themselves in a bind where they can't afford the insurance combined with a payment for the house, and they end up having to sell that property and to somebody richer that might be able to afford it.
Ocean conditions were favorable for storms this summer, and the Gulf of Mexico was unusually hot, well above normal, but no major hurricane reached the mainland. Are experts learning what triggers years with multiple named storms versus quiet years?
Oh, yeah, but I mean, there's so many reasons for that. And frankly, you can have a very active year and still not have the steering currents set up in such a way to allow for the hurricanes to reach the U.S. mainland. So I think this year is a good example of that. I mean, we've had, category 4 or greater hurricanes. Three of those became category 5 hurricanes. The season, by the way, is already by that count, by not just by the count of major hurricanes and extreme hurricanes, but by the count of accumulated cyclone energy, which takes into account the longevity of the storm, the intensity of the storm. By that count, we're also above normal this hurricane season, just as predicted. But Americans think that nothing happened. and watch the news cycle move on from Jamaica And Americans will quickly forget about this hurricane season because it did not impact the mainland. The steering currents were not right. We had many strong hurricanes, all of them potentially catastrophic, much like the one that hit Jamaica did. But we had a big dip in the jet stream along the eastern seaboard, which tended to deflect the storms off to the north, have them recurve far out at sea and not strike the U.S. And in the case of the Western Caribbean and the Gulf of Mexico, you know, nothing forming there at the time of the year where it could be steered towards the U.S. So I think the U.S. lucked out.
It comes down to luck.
It often does, yes.
All right. Now, according to news reports, the administration cut hurricane monitoring in half. Are you confident that private companies like yours can provide predictions that governments and the public need?
Well, the model, the business model of the American Weather Enterprise doesn't work like that. Our private companies can't do the work without the scaffolding that NOAA and the National Weather Service provides. So this is not like the business model elsewhere or in just about all other countries that I know of, where there are fees for data and fees for services from the National Meteorological and Hydrological Services of all these different countries, right? In the U.S., the taxpayers fund NOAA and the National Weather Service. That data is utilized and leveraged by private companies to provide value-added services, which the government alone cannot provide. So, you know, for example, my company, we don't do this anymore simply because we, you know, those clients have moved on or whatnot. We used to provide very specific forecasts for multinational pharmaceutical companies doing business in Puerto Rico, right? You know, the Johnson's & Johnson's, Baxter Pharmaceuticals, and others. Why? Because they had 24-hour operations that were very sensitive to weather conditions, and they were concerned about their employees, when they could go home, when could they return, what shifts were safe to open, when did they have to shut down their chemical processes. You know, you can't be asking the National Weather Service, the government weather service, to be providing that level of detail to each and every interested entity out there to do that. So the value-added services provided by companies like ours with the data provided by NOAA enhances the economy and helps these, in this case, these pharmaceuticals and multinationals be able to produce their medications and drugs and whatnot, which are a benefit to society. So, you know, in the U.S., without, at least in our current business model, without the help of NOAA, private companies, and this includes the biggest ones, you know, think of the AccuWeathers of the world, or the Weather Company, which is owned by IBM, which used to own the Weather Channel, right? You know, these are some of the biggest weather companies in the world, and I'm telling you, without NOAA, we're nothing. So we need that entity, that government agency, to continue to be strong.
And your website at climadata.com offers forensic meteorology. What is that, John?
Sure. Forensic meteorology is the reconstruction of past weather events. So you're almost like a detective. You are accessing or mining for data to be analyzed by a meteorologist, well, for accuracy and calibration, and then combining that with the weather maps or maybe reconstructions through weather models of past weather events, all in the process oftentimes of aiding in litigation where weather has been a factor. So forensic meteorologists are often working with attorneys, again, in litigation. They could be working for plaintiff or for defendant. It depends. And that's not to say that that's the exclusive realm of a forensic meteorologist. You know, you could potentially see a forensic meteorologist working in an aircraft accident investigation or a traffic investigation or a marine incident, right? It doesn't have to be in litigation, but that's what forensic meteorologists do.
As we wrap up here, do you think that Hurricane Melissa is something that experts like yourself will remember for a time? And if so, why? Is this a real record setter?
Yeah, I'm certainly going to remember Melissa for probably the rest of my career. And that's because to be alive at the time when I witnessed the strongest hurricane on record to hit land anywhere in the Atlantic basin, well, that's historic. And that's by two measures. It's by barometric pressure at 892 millibars, and it's by maximum sustained wind speed of 185 mile per hour. There have been hurricanes with stronger wind speeds. Hurricane Allen comes to mind in 1980, wind speed of 190 miles per hour. But Allen did not make landfall when it was at 190 miles per hour, right? There have been stronger hurricanes by pressure. Hurricane Gilbert in 1988 and Hurricane Wilma in 2005. But both of those pressure records of 888 and 882, respectively, were not set as the hurricanes were making landfall. And the pressure by the time they made landfall was nowhere near what it was for Melissa. So, Melissa's name will be retired from the list of available names for future tropical cyclones in the Atlantic. We will not see another Melissa. That name will be retired.
From Miami, we've been talking with TV personality and professional hurricane forecaster John Tule Morales. And John, thank you for spending time with our radio listeners.
Well, I was glad to be here, and thanks for the excellent questions.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.